This is the Jason Jones Show, powered by Mudhouse Media. Now, here's Jason Jones.
Aloha, everybody, and welcome to the Jason Jones Show. I am your host, Jason Jones, broadcasting from the beautiful hill country of Texas. First of all, I'm back from my hiatus, and it was unplanned hiatus because we were overwhelmed with work, our work in Afghanistan. I'm not going to talk about that today because we have a big show, a very big show, but I will have in the show notes, I was on EWTN News Nightly 2 days ago where they interviewed me on the work we're doing in Afghanistan. I will put that there. Also, we've been causing mischief advocating for the Uyghur at NBA games around the country. I'll play some articles in the show notes on that. So we have been slammed, but we've been getting a lot done. And we've been working in countries all over the world as we evacuate Afghan Christians and those who fought side by side with our men and women in Afghanistan to safer countries. And then we're working to permanently resettle them in other countries. And we'll be doing a show on that this Friday. With John Zmirak, we're going to do an update on all things with John Zmirak, the great John Zmirak. But today, first of all, happy Thanksgiving, and maybe not the best day to come back from a hiatus, but the reason we're back today is we're interviewing Nick Searcy. I think he called himself the most important man in America or Captain Freedom. In the podcast, he comes up with a name for himself, which I agree. I think it's a great name and it's applicable. The great Nick Searcy and Chris Burgard. Chris Burgard is a good friend of mine from the entertainment industry. He is an actor and a producer. He's best known for The Border, but, you know, I remember him best for appearing in Tour of Duty and several times in The Growing Pains, on the TV show Growing Pains when I was a kid. And Nick Searcy is, I'm a big fan. And I'm a fan of his TV show Justified, which is the only TV show I have watched the entire series of since maybe Different Strokes or Family Guy, not Family Guy, The Facts of Life when I was a kid growing up in the 80s. And maybe I haven't watched a single TV series through from beginning to end other than Justified. So to have the great Nick Searcy, also the director of Gosnell, which he didn't know, I didn't bring it up. I am in. I play a CNN reporter. And I forgot, you know, that I was an extra in that film, as I am as an extra in so many of my friends' films. But they have a new documentary. And this is not hyperbole. It may be the most important documentary you will ever see. And it's called Capital Punishment, and that is capital with an O, Capital Punishment, the movie, and it is their documentary on what happened at the Capitol on January 6th. And in this film, it is just, you are going to see the FBI instigating people into criminal behavior. You are going to see members of Antifa inciting crowds. You will see someone will confess on camera that they were paid to go to the January 6th event and break things and cause damage. And by the way, none of these people have been charged and or prosecuted, but you will see them there. In the documentary, you will also see me, Jason Jones. I am, again, in this documentary as an extra, and if there was any movie I would ever want to be in as an extra and not the star of the show, it is definitely this movie. But it is very important, and I am very grateful for these guys. So I'm just going to stop jibber-jabbering and get on to this interview because they are great guests. And this episode is being brought to you by the Vulnerable People Project, standing in solidarity with the vulnerable when they are most vulnerable, from the child in the womb to families right now, this very minute, hiding in safe houses in Afghanistan. And the Vulnerable People Project, as far as I know, we may be the only one of the only organizations in the world that are not only evacuating people, resettling folks, but we, through our networks, are having food, emergency food and relief delivered to them in their safe houses in Afghanistan. That is what we do. We stand with the vulnerable when there's a cost. And by the way, that's why I'm doing this movie. That's why this movie is on the show. This is why it's coming out today. It's coming out today in like 2 hours. And the reason I'm doing this show is because Nick Searcy and Chris Burgard, what is the motto of the show? To be in solidarity with the vulnerable is to be vulnerable. Why would these two Hollywood guys stand with the folks that are being terrorized by our government for going down to the Capitol on January 6th? Because we know to stand with the vulnerable is to become vulnerable. And so they made this film at great risk to themselves. And that's why you are going to go to capitalpunishmentthemovie.com and you are going to watch this film. It's going to blow your mind because everything I saw January 6th that the media refused to cover, you are going to see in this documentary. It is absolutely unbelievable. But if you want to stand shoulder to shoulder with the vulnerable, you're going to watch this movie and you're going to become a monthly donor to the Vulnerable People Project. Go to our website, thegreatcampaign.org, and you can do it there. And as always, talk about standing in solidarity with the vulnerable. You know who that is, Mike Lindell of MyPillow, is recklessly bold, recklessly courageous in standing with the vulnerable and advocating for the vulnerable. And he sponsors the show. And so if you go to MyPillow.com right now and check out all of the specials, the Black Friday specials, and you use the code Jones, you are going to get deep, deep, deep discounts for all their products. And so what better way to buy all of your Christmas gifts? You should buy all of your Christmas gifts at MyPillow.com using the code Jones, because you support the show when you do that, and you can get the best gifts for everybody. You get a MyPillow slippers, you get the Giza Dream sheets, you get the best product on earth, best thing ever invented is the mattress topper. There's never been anything in the world more comfortable, more luxurious, more wonderful than the mattress topper. And you use the code Jones and you get deep discounts on all of that for all of your Christmas gifts. And that's what we start thinking about the day after tomorrow, right? All right. So let's get on with the show with an interview with the great Chris Burgard and the Captain Freedom, or I forget what he calls himself, Nick Searcy. Here we go. It's the Jason Jones Show. Aloha, Chris Burgard. Welcome to the Jason Jones Show.
¿Qué pasó, amiga? ¿Está bien?
No hablo español. Me llamo José Antonio. ¿Y tú?
Jason, thank you for having me, buddy. Every day's Christmas, except for tomorrow's going to be Thanksgiving. But just blessed to be in your show, man. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me, my friend.
No, I'm blessed to have you on my show. But I need to tell you, you started with Spanish. I would speak Spanish fluently. I took 4 years of Spanish, 3.5 years of Spanish in high school, and I dropped out. But do you know the most beautiful girl in my school sat in front of me for all 3 years? And so all I know is half the alphabet in like 3 words.
And the back of her head.
That's it. Like, it's horrible. It's horrible. So, no, brother, you are a friend of mine, but I don't know. You're one of those people I lament that I haven't had an opportunity to become a better friend with. You know, we know each other. We're friends. We really like each other, I think. I really like you. I really admire you. But I just haven't – you're someone I've really wished I could get to know and spend more time with.
Same here. We've both been very busy these last 17 years, so it's tough. But we're on the same side, and God's putting together a great team, and, you know, humbled and happy to be here.
Yeah, you say past 17 years. So we met, if I remember correctly, was it at a – Friends of Abe meeting?
No, I think it was through John Sullivan, or was it Troy? Might have been Troy Newman.
Now, John Sullivan, you mean the movie producer, not the Antifa member, John Sullivan. I want to make sure that that's clear. We met at Antifa. We met at a World Trade Organization protest in 2003. You were setting a garbage can on fire, and I was spray painting an anarchy symbol on the Capitol. Yeah, no, not that John Sullivan. Different John Sullivan.
John Sullivan, the movie producer, he's much taller than the other one, so yeah.
And better looking, because we look alike, I'm told.
Well, you're both two tall blonde guys. That's all I know. I'm only 5'8", so I look up to both of you.
Okay, so we met through John Sullivan, but you were a member of Friends of Abe.
I was, almost from the very beginning.
So we're allowed. Are we allowed to talk about being in a secret society that's now defunct?
No, we still have to kill people if we tell them.
Really? So if you... Okay, I'm
sorry. Can you imagine the soundbite I just gave our enemies right
now? Oh, my gosh. The Friends of Abe, Hollywood. Charlie Sheen right now is texting Chris Burgard is a Jesuit FOA assassin.
Yeah, humor doesn't translate well on wiretap. So.
No, it doesn't. Well, ideologues are humorless, right?
Copy.
By God's grace. It brings me joy to know that ideologues are humorless. That makes me very happy to know. That my enemies have no joy in this life. So, all right, you're making a movie, and I want to just tell you this was a very imprudent decision. This movie that's coming out today, and then while people are listening to this, the movie is now out. And I believe, and this is not hyperbole, that this is the most courageous and powerful and potentially important film, and that's going to depend on the marketing and on how we respond. But as far as the film itself, I'm going to say this. It is the most courageous film, and it is a powerful film, and it could change the course of history. And there are not a lot of films that you can say that about. And it's your film, Capital Punishment, which I would like to say that my friends always put me in as extras. I am very glad. I always want a better part, but I'm very glad in your film I am in it, but kind of just an extra, and that makes me very happy. I'm glad. I would hate to be one of the starring characters in this film.
Well, that was amazing when I sat down going through the footage, and I was like, Nick, that's Jason. Hey, he's wearing the guy in the camel, the cashmere coat that's right there. And it was pretty cool because not only were you in the film, but also it proves you didn't go into the Capitol building because you didn't go into the Capitol building when everybody else did. So
you exonerated me. Yeah, I want to get to that. Your film... I've been telling people that I think I was set up, and everyone else was, but I think I was targeted, and it sounds kooky. But your film, I think, captures the moment I've been telling everyone about. And what are the chances that you would be – was that you filming that, and you didn't even know that was me, or was that one of your crews?
No, that was Nick. That was Nick on his iPhone.
When you say Nick, Nick Searcy.
Nick Searcy, so international film and television star.
And star of my favorite TV show of all time, Justified. And I'm not kidding you. It is the best TV show of all time, in my humble opinion.
Nick, pretty darn awesome.
So I am in Nick Searcy's phone. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Nick Searcy and I made a movie together. Yeah, he directed me. Nick and I made a movie together. That is awesome. So how many camera crews did you have on the Capitol that day?
Well, let me answer that question, but first let me go back to what you said about being set up.
Okay.
We are literally living in a time. I mean, you have to understand, knowledge is power, and we're living in an information war. So that's just reality. That's what we're doing. So setting somebody up and working in political ops, in a psyop, that's pretty SOP, setting people up. So, you know, you say that and some people may think you're just joking. I can tell you from making this movie and people that are in the film, people that have been arrested by the FBI, there was a fella in the movie he's ex-law enforcement. He was arrested. He never went into the Capitol building, but he did organize anti-mask protests, and he helped organize Trump caravans. And after they arrested him, he began to put two and two together, and he realized that he had been set up in many ways, and going to different speaking events, and people push him, take a picture with this guy, And one of the people that they in an event in Arizona, they wanted him to take a picture with was Jacob Chansley, the guy they called the QAnon shaman. So this guy had been set up, and now he's facing major charges. We took him out of the movie because it just got too tense for him. But he had been set up. And talking to other people that have been arrested, they start to go back and they look in the indictments and they look at who they've been hanging around with the last year. And a lot of these guys were set up. So you're not being a crazy person. Is it crazy to think people are trying to set you up when people are actually trying to set you up? I mean, that's a very legitimate question to be asking, Jason, especially for somebody in your position.
Yeah, no, and I want to come back to that later. But before we even get to sort of the film, so you've done this documentary, which is incredible. It's called Capital Punishment. It's on what happened on January 6th. I was there as a speaker. Actually, I was invited to speak, and I was there to speak on the Uyghur and on the plight of ethnic and religious minorities around the world, especially Christians in Iraq and Syria and the Uyghur and Chinese-occupied East Turkestan. That's why I was there at the event. Gave a speech on January 5th on that. On January 6th, of course, the stage, as far as I know, I never saw it, was never set up. And, you know, we all know what happened. There was no speech behind the Capitol in the parking lot. That's why I was there. It was just, for me, another thing on my schedule. You know, where can I speak? Where can I promote the, you know, my organization seeks to advance the interests of vulnerable. The vulnerable will go anywhere. I was invited to speak. I said, yeah, this is a great opportunity. And by the way, I do believe the election was stolen. And but I wasn't there. I wasn't there to speak on that. So it's just something else in my schedule. In fact, I didn't roll out of bed until 11:30. I raced down to the Capitol, raced down to the VIP tent. And then from there, after the president's speech, raced to give my speech, which I was never able to give. But I had no idea what was about to happen, and I can't imagine you did either. So can you explain to me what you and Nick were doing there, and you had camera crews. Were you going there just to film a great event? Did you have a sense that there would be a documentary in just this day? Or, so how did this film happen?
Great question. And by the way, your story is almost exactly the same as Dr. Simone Gold's story. She was invited to speak, never did, and found herself caught up in the crowd going in. And she wound up being arrested for it. Luckily, you didn't go in. Okay, so how did this film come to be? Jason, I've been working in this business a long time. If I've ever seen the hand of God on a project, it's on this project. This whole thing has been a God thing. We didn't even decide to go to D.C. until 2 days before the event. I just felt this tugging. I felt this call to go there. I said to Nick, and he was on the other side of the country. I said, I'm telling you, it's going to be a day in history. We just need to be there. We need to be there. And let's just document this day in history. So Nick, on Twitter, he does these walks all around Los Angeles. So he just did a walk around DC and he filmed stuff that he saw. I brought cameras out. My daughter, who's 17, I gave her a camera, and when we first got there, we all got separated. And as you remember, it was 2 million people, and cell phones weren't working, texts weren't working. So at first it was kind of concerning, where's my daughter, where's my wife? But it was all a God thing because we were all separated. She got great footage of the president. She got footage of people that had come from all over the country. Nick got different footage from me. That turned out to be a wonderful thing. So the way that day goes, there's 2 million people. It's just so crowded. It's unbelievable. I mean, some places you're packed so hard, you can't raise the camera above your head because you can't get your arms out. The president is an hour late coming in to speak. And then he speaks for like another hour and kind of repeats himself. And everybody's like, well, it's kind of dragging. What's going on?
It was actually, it was a horrible speech, right? It was just bizarre. In my mind, it wasn't tight. It was just a guy talking.
Right.
That's my feeling. You don't have to agree with that. That's just how I feel.
No. I do agree with that. And I have other reasons I can go into why I think that happened, but let's save that for later. So the speech ends, and you can see, you'll see in the movie, they re-edited what he said to make it look like he was asking people to storm the Capitol by taking stuff out of context and creatively editing together what he said that day. We break that down in the film. Speech ends. Everybody's dancing to YMCA. We begin the walk down to the Capitol. And it was so crowded, it took a long time to get there. But as we're walking down to the Capitol, I looked to my wife and I said, honey, I've got a bad feeling. She goes, what do you mean? I said, I'm kind of getting deja vu back to Honduras when I was covering the color revolution down there. I said, look around you. I said, where's CNN? Where's Fox? Usually in a protest this size, you're tripping over camera crews and there's no one here filming this. I said, honey, that tells me that the images of grandmothers and grandfathers and people praying and peacefully marching isn't what they want to run with to push a narrative this day. I got a bad feeling something's going to happen when we get to the Capitol building at the end of this march. Just then, Nick calls me, and this is the footage you're in. Nick calls me, and he says, I just watched the Capitol Police move the bicycle racks. They're letting people into the Capitol building. And I looked at Lisa, and I said, honey, someone's going to die today. Because it felt just like kind of what happened to set up at the Tegucigalpa Airport in Honduras. But then when we saw them start lying to us so badly and creating this narrative for what I would stand up and say was an orchestrated event, we had to make this film. And God brought together the people, the places, and the finances to be able to make this film and tell the story. And I think we got it right. I really do. And this isn't a political movie, Jason. This is an American movie. This is a movie about a day in history, and it needs to be seen by people of all sides of the aisle and all persuasions.
Well, you know what your film did for me? First of all, when I just watched the sizzle reel, I was moved. And then when I had the privilege, you sent me a screener. I texted a friend of mine I think may have contributed to the film, and I said, I think you just supported what may be one of the most important films, you know, documentaries of all time, because you capture a day, and I was always so glad I was there, and people would say, why are you glad you were there? You know, the FBI might kick your door down any day. And I said, because I think I would have been swept away by the misinformation. And I am so grateful that by being there, I've been inoculated from all of these lies, and I can tell people the truth. And what your film does, it so beautifully captures the truth of that day. And by the way, we just let the great Nick Searcy's just join the show. Nick, welcome to the Jason Jones Show.
Hey, Jason, how are you?
You know, I'm your biggest fan, and I discovered Justified, and after it was done, and I binge watched on the roof of my office at the Hollywood and Vine building, underneath that big Patron sign, every night. It was the best part of my life. It was being up there alone at midnight watching you, and your courage. You know, whenever I work on a film, I say the key to a film's success, a niche film in any tribe, is that you have to have somebody that is willing to take a risk. And I've never seen I've never seen a filmmaker take a bigger risk than you in making this film. Okay. And did you ever doubt you? Why are you doing this?
Yeah, no, Chris got me in trouble. It's all his fault, you know. His idea, it's not mine. But as we went along, you know, and we started talking to these people and hearing what had happened to them at the hands of the FBI, and how they were being treated by the Department of Justice, and how they were being treated by their neighbors, by their community. You know, yeah, it started to dawn on me, hey, we might get in trouble if we make this movie. But, you know, by then it was too late. We were too far along. And I go, well, what the hell? I'm old anyway. Let's finish it.
Well, you know, honest question. Here's a real question. You know, the Christian anthropologist Rene Girard said that, when you stand in solidarity with the vulnerable, and when you stand next to the vulnerable when the mob is attacking, you become indistinguishable from those who you're standing next to the mob. Did you ever, did you really, both of you, this is to both of you guys, did you ever think maybe we just shouldn't do this? Maybe we should stop. Did that ever cross your mind?
No.
No, well, not really. No, after we started, it was like, the more we uncovered, you know, the more we learned about how these people were being treated, it kind of drove us harder. It's like, we got to tell people this. I can't believe that the American people, if they knew this was going on, if they knew how these people were being treated, that they would support it. I don't care what party you're in. You know, people that never went in the building, never have been arrested for anything in their lives, veterans, business owners, fathers, you know, Christians. I mean, these people were decent people, members of the community that you would be proud to live next to, feel safe living next to, and they are treating these people like they're Pablo Escobar or, you know, some sort of serial killer. It's insane. And the more we learned about it, the more I wanted to tell people, look at this. this is what's happened.
You know, here's a confession. I, you know, in 2016, I was a national co-chair for Cruz for President, was not a fan of Trump at all. Steve Bannon's a good friend of mine. At the RNC, at the convention, I was just miserable. And I was down, was not a fan of MAGA. Then I worked closely with the administration through my work in working with ethnic and religious minorities suffering persecution. And the Trump administration and President Trump himself was the best president ever for vulnerable ethnic and religious minorities around the world. But yet, I still didn't understand MAGA. And I tell people, it wasn't until January 6th that I got what the MAGA movement was about. And your documentary shares this for everyone. That was the most diverse crowd I have ever seen. As somebody who's been a political activist since he was 17, I've been to a lot of these events on all sides of the spectrum. If you would have just given them Acme flags and hats and colors, you unblindfolded somebody and said, "What is this event?" they would never be able to figure it out. I've never seen such a diverse group.
And they never show that. They would never, ever, the media would never tell you that. And I have a friend who also was there that day, and I talked to him just last week. He had his door broken down by the FBI, like all the other people in the movie. He declined to be interviewed in the movie because it had happened. So I talked to him 8 days after it had happened, and he was scared. You know, he was afraid to tell his story yet because he didn't know what was going to happen to him. I talked to him last week. He said they broke his door down. They threatened him with all these charges, and they never, ever contacted him again. And I said, "Why do you think that is?" He said, "I think it's because I'm black." He said, "It would ruin their narrative, because their whole narrative is that it's all a bunch of white supremacist, racist, you know, Trump-supporting terrorists. And if they arrest a black guy, you know, there that goes." And it was an interesting point, you know.
It's hard for us, because Americans, I think, the one thing we share across the spectrum is we have a belief in fairness. And I think it's hard for us to believe this. You know, one of my questions is, and this must be, you guys must be asking yourself the same question, is I ask myself, why hasn't the FBI kicked down my door? Now, Nick, I was so excited to find out, you know, I'm in your film, I'm an extra, and I'm very glad I'm just an extra in this film. But I asked Chris, who shot that footage of me in your film? He said, Nick Searcy. So I'm going to put on my Wikipedia after the show that I was directed by Nick Searcy in Capital Punishment.
Which shot are you in? Which one are you in?
You really exonerated me. So all my friends are going to go, "Oh, Jason's not a crazy person," because I'm going to send your film to everybody. Because this is what I told my friends. I was racing from the president to give my speech, which is I was going to be there speaking on behalf of the genocide of the Uyghur. As you know, because you walked the same route, I saw all these South Vietnamese flags, and I saw all the East Turkestan flags and the Hong Kong flags, and then I saw the Falun Gong with the drums, and I just kept getting distracted, and I was taking all these pictures, and I was thinking, I'm going to miss my speech, because the president went on awful long, and I didn't know when the speech was or where exactly it was. So as I was racing my way to give a speech, and then I just wanted to go get Thai soup. This is all I was thinking. And I had to go to the bathroom. And I'm from Hawaii, so I'm cold. I'm like, I give my speech. I want to go to the bathroom, and I want to get Thai food. This is all that's going through my mind. And as I'm racing past the Capitol on where the bike racks were, these two girls say, "Jason Jones, we're your biggest fans." And so I fell for it. And they said, "Can we get a picture with you?" And I said, "Yes." And so I walked right up to the bike racks. They took a picture. Then as I tried to walk away, they were pulling me, holding me, trying not to let me go. And said, "Stay with us, stay with us." I broke free. I walked 20 yards away. This is in your documentary. I walked 20 yards away where I'm looking. You can see me looking around. I'm looking for the stage. And I see the bike racks opened up by the Capitol Police. Where I was standing 10 seconds before, Jason Jones with his VIP pass would have been seen leading the charge. Well, of course, there was no charge. It was like people walking into this, you know, Six Flags when they opened the gates. People just walked in because the Capitol Police, as you captured, opened it up.
Yeah, they let them come in. Yeah. And, you know, rushing in, I mean, most of the people were my age. You know, we weren't armed with anything except maybe blood pressure medicine and polygrip. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, most we talked to these two 74-year-old twin sisters who basically walked in the Capitol because they saw people walking in and out. They walked in. The police were standing right there. They said, is it okay if we're in here? They said, the policeman said, yes. And they took a couple of pictures. They walked back out. 3 weeks later, the FBI is knocking on their door, threatening them with the, you know, a crime and telling them they're on a no-fly list now because they're classified as domestic terrorists.
And they, and for people to understand, when you're in the midst of 2 million people and you're just being kind of pushed along, which is what happened to a lot of the speakers, they were following the people they were told to follow and they marched them right into the Capitol, which was very strange to me. But because yeah. I got broken up from the group because I can't, you know, pay attention to orders and I'm easily distracted. And you know what else saved me, guys? I have a weak bladder and I'm lazy. So I remember thinking, you know, when I realized there wasn't going to be a speech, I was like, you know, I can either go get my Thai soup, my Tom Kha Gai, and find a restroom, or I write for the stream and maybe I should go in and write an article about what's happening. I'm like, man, I'm so tired. I just want soup and I'm going home. And I went home.
Yeah. Well, that was kind of me too. I left there about probably 2:30. Probably 2:30 or 3 is when I left the Capitol, and that's, you know, I didn't know that anything bad had happened. I had just seen people singing and waving flags. And, you know, they were all standing on the steps singing, we're not going to take it, when I was there. I thought that was funny. And I went home. Crazy.
Did you have any sense, Chris or Nick, did you have any sense of that this was going, the ball was going to bounce very bad for people inside the Capitol? Or did you just think that was strange? And, you know, when did it hit you that this was more serious? Because, you know, it didn't hit me until I was at home that night watching the news. I said, oh, when the young woman was shot. Well,
personally, I didn't even know that anybody went to the Capitol. I didn't know that anybody went in until I got home and watched the news.
Because you were on the Supreme Court side in the parking lot, where I don't think that, was that side ever breached?
I don't know. I mean, I know that they climbed up on the steps after the police moved the barricades and waved them in. They went up on the steps, but all I saw them doing was waving flags and singing, and they were laughing, and it was kind of fun. You know, it didn't look dangerous to me at all.
And then when you think this is all happening, and everyone there had the memory of the violence and the chaos that took place all across America with Antifa and BLM, that they could never have imagined the kind of consequences they were going to face for walking up on some steps and taking a selfie.
No, they let the BLM and Antifa riots go on all year long. You know, that brings in the Rittenhouse thing. That's why that happened. They let those riots go on in Kenosha for so long, they pulled the police back. The governor wouldn't allow the National Guard in, so people had to defend themselves. People had to because the police weren't doing their job. And that's done intentionally. All those people that caused all the damage in Kenosha, none of them have been charged. But they single out Kyle Rittenhouse for protecting his own life because all of that was deliberate. They were trying to set up a situation where they could criminalize self-defense. So then when the government pulls back the police and won't stop the mob from coming to kill you or tear down your property, if you defend yourself, you're going to be the one that goes to jail. That's what they were trying to do. But the jurors in Kenosha were brave, and they stopped them. That's what the point of all of this has been. January 6th was very similar in that what they wanted was a riot like Kenosha, like Minneapolis, that they could blame on the right, that they could blame on Trump support. That's what they wanted. And they really didn't get it, but they ran with the narrative anyway.
Your courage, I believe, is there's been a handful of people, you guys, Tucker Carlson, just a few people with a real voice that I think probably puts chills down their spine. By standing with these people, you've probably saved hundreds of men and women from going away from prisons. Hundreds of children will grow up. I believe this because of your film. And we need to make this film a huge success. It deserves it. It is a beautiful, powerful film. And you've taken a great risk to make this film. But I really do believe, and I'm surprised at how many people, and it hasn't been a lot, but it has been just enough, I think, to be a game changer, and that there'll be a lot of children that will have their mom or their dad in their life now that they're not going to be shipped off to prison because they took a selfie in the Capitol for 10 years. Do you think that's true?
Jason, I pray you're right. I can share something with you that happened last week. The movie hadn't even come out yet. It got out in the neighborhood that we'd made this film. A friend of a friend calls my wife because his wife can't leave the house. She had gone to the Capitol that day, didn't go up into the building, but she had been visited by the FBI just down the road from us, scared the heck out of her. She can't eat. She can't sleep. She's afraid to leave the house. How many people is this happening to? And she was just on tears on the phone to my wife. Just thank you, because I'm so alone. I'm so scared. I'm just so scared. People are so scared of our own government. How many other people is this happening to? And the January 6th event didn't end on January 6th. The Capitol Police, Nancy Pelosi's Capitol Police, they want to put Capitol Police headquarters in Florida and in California because they said there's still so many people out there that day that have yet to be apprehended. That should frighten the crap out of every American in this country.
So this woman didn't go into the Capitol. She just walked up onto the steps.
I don't know if she got as far as the steps. She just said she was there. She didn't think she went anywhere she wasn't supposed to be. And she's not an activist. She's not anything. And she's just scared. I mean, and you're going to see in the film, you've got five-year-old, a seven-year-old, that, you know, they've got PTSD. They have nightmares at night. Little kids waking up in battlefield, you know, conditions. I mean, as Isabel, the 13-year-old who was handcuffed and taken out in the cold, says, she thought it was war and her hearing was gone. She couldn't hear. And then when her hearing came back, she was worried about her dog, and then they put her in handcuffs. And she's a 13-year-old girl. It's insane. I don't know if you talked about this, Jason. My dad was FBI. He graduated from the FBI Academy on 9th session, Quantico, Virginia. My dad was a law enforcement officer. I have great respect for the FBI. I know rank and file members. What is going on now is insane. It's third world. It's Venezuela. It's Egypt. It's Ukraine. It's happening here. And when you see Americans that are arrested and thrown into prison, and for 9 days they have no phone call to their attorney, 9 days in the United States of America, this is insane.
Yeah, no, they're...
And make no mistake, making people afraid is the point. This is a campaign of terror, like something Stalin would have done, or Kim Jong-il, or any other totalitarian dictator. They are trying to scare people by saying, if you oppose us, this is what's going to happen to you. And whether you did anything wrong or not is not the point. Don't oppose us, but we can do this anytime we want.
And they have a woman, your friend, who won't even leave the house. You know, so in filmmaking, the inciting incident of a documentary is not in the film, right? It's before the film. But for me, in this documentary, you each had something that happened to you in your life that gave you the courage to make this film. And can I ask of each of you what that was? Guys just don't make this movie. Something happened to give you courage and empathy to stand with these folks.
I would have to say, just personally, my parents modeled for me bravery. They were always outnumbered politically in the town that we lived in, and they never stopped. They never shut up. They never stopped fighting for what they believed, and they were unafraid. My mother was a biology teacher, but she refused to join the National Teachers Union because she said there were leftists and she's not going to participate or give them any money. She's the only one in her school who did that. I mean, you know, things like that. My father was a little bit of a politician, ran for school board in a heavily Democrat town, almost won. And just the fact that they showed me not to worry about what people say about you, stand up for what you believe in, say what you believe to be true, and, you know, the heck with anybody who wants to defame you because of that. And that my parents showed me how to do that.
That's beautiful.
I think for me, it started with my dad. He was a veteran. He was law enforcement. And my dad just was always trying to do the right thing. And just that you could do anything you wanted to put your mind to put into the right thing. And then years later, I ended up on the border and seeing how bad America was being lied to. And I came back and I told my wife, and I said, what do we do? And she's like, we have the right things. We have to tell America because this is evil, what's going on. And so what gets me to be able to make this film is my family, my wife, and my faith, because God's been in this from the beginning. And the stuff that could scare the crap out of you, it just doesn't resonate. It doesn't stick with you because I feel like we're doing God's work here, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd just like to say that, you know, it's obvious too that if Chris couldn't have done this film without me, because without me, Chris is nothing.
Yeah. And without you, I wouldn't be in the film, Nick.
It really is all about Nick Searcy. Saving the country is secondary.
I think it was,
I mean, let's get back to it. You know, I'm just being real here. Let's just get back to real facts.
You know, isn't that the great gift of slaying dragons is that you're surrounded by brave, noble people. When you step up to a dragon and you don't bolt, and you say, I'm standing my ground, and then you notice you're not alone, and you look to your left and your right, and all that surrounds you are the most beautiful, noble people, and you make the best friendships, that camaraderie.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, Nick's been doing this a long time, and Nick has it harder than me because he is a big star, and, you know, I'm just the guy that makes him look good on camera. But, you know, this, look at his Twitter wars. Look at how many people hate him, and look at how Hollywood is scared of him. You know, this goes back to our Andrew days. You know, I would have left Hollywood in 2007, and Andrew Breitbart talked me out of it because he asked me to stay and fight. And that's about when I met Nick, was way back then. And we were two kind of like, I don't know, I wouldn't say we were outcasts, but we were definitely two peas in a pod. And, you know, we first started working together on Herman Cain commercials, and then we did a thing called Acting School with Nick Searcy. And we found just the more fun we had doing stuff, the more dangerous it was to the left. So we just kept doing it. And right now, this film that Nick and I have just made, I think that this is, if I was one of the enemies of the United States that orchestrated this event, I would be very afraid of this film, because this film shows people the truth, and a lie cannot stand in the presence of truth.
I'm about to wrap this up because I know you guys have a lot of shows to do today, but I mean, some of the truth that I think I saw in there was that clearly the FBI was there instigating people. Clearly you document it. I see Antifa in the bushes changing their clothes. I see John Saul. I see other guys there that are Antifa, BLM. This is all in the film, and you cannot run from it.
Right. And they're lying about it. They won't admit it, and they, you know, Christopher Wray lied to Congress about it, you know, and this is the thing. You are being lied to by the government. That's what this movie shows. And whether you want to continue to believe it or not, just face it. You're being lied to.
So when we take back the House, we should have a real January 6th investigation, shouldn't we?
You know, this is the thing. It's like, this is the problem with Republicans. We should be standing up now, not waiting until we take back the House.
Okay.
They're not standing up, because what happens is the Democrats, whenever they get the power like they have now, where they have both houses of Congress and the presidency, they move the ball as far down the field as they possibly can, and then maybe we take the House back or something, and we move it back up the field about 5-10 yards, and then they get back in power, and they go all out again. So we need to be standing up now. That's what I hope this film will tell people. Stop being afraid of telling these people the truth and stand up to them now. Don't wait until we get enough power.
And Jason, it's very important people understand this is not a political movie. Yes, it's about Trump. But one of the big lies is being told is this is left versus right, Republican versus Democrat. No, this event and what's going on in the country, this is a Take Down America event. This is the bad guys against the good guys. And
that's right. The only way that they win, it's not us versus them in America, left versus right. Our job is to stay united as a people. and they win by dividing us. And I'm sure this is true for both of you guys. I can say I am on a text thread with Sean King, right? Through a mutual friend of mine from the entertainment industry, the BLM guy. I'm constantly saying, hey, can you tweet you Uyghur Lives Matter? You know, I have friends all over the political spectrum, friends that have gender, they have pronouns I don't recognize or genders I don't know what they are. I have, you know, these, we have people we love in our industry. You cannot help but develop very deep, powerful, strong relationships across the ideological spectrum. And maybe that was the greatest risk you guys probably take is people close to you who are sort of addled by ideology, those relationships ending. Is that the hardest part?
It is. And you have to look, once you see the truth of what's going on, and once you understand how January 6th was years in the making and the anti-American efforts that were made to push this movement into the United States of America, you don't see so much right and left. You see fellow Americans that have been completely brainwashed by strategic military level propaganda that is hitting them from all sides. It's hitting from the government, it's hitting from the corporations. It's huge. The amount of censorship that's going on, it's not just social media. We can't buy ads on national networks for this movie. We can't buy ads on a lot of different organizations because the censorship is so extreme.
It's not because your movie's ridiculous. It's not because it's absurd. It's because it hits the nail on the head.
Correct. So when you think of your, instead of thinking of them as our enemy, these are fellow Americans who have been just the victim of an attack on America.
And, you know, to go back to your question, you know, I have friends and even family members that you know, it's like, I'm sorry, you know, after all these years that the politics has driven us apart. And I say to them, look, I haven't changed. I've been this way for 30 years. You know, your politics are what's driving me apart. I'm no different than I was when we were best friends. You know, you are looking at me differently because the government that you worship is telling you how to look at me. I don't look at you any different. I've always known you were a brain dead liberal, but we were still friends, you know?
But what your film demonstrates is the key is that you love our country more than you worried about what people think about you. But it hits home the hardest when these are people you really love. And so I just want to thank you for your courage. And I'm going to, you know, Movie to Movement's going to be sending this out to all of our folks through our lists. And I'll be promoting it on all of our podcasts from now until you guys are done with this initial run. So I really can't thank you enough. I had COVID a couple of months ago. And one of my best friends, who's a UFC heavyweight fighter, got COVID for me and almost died. And I've been meaning to go on Wikipedia and update it, saying that I almost killed this guy. And now I get to say in the same update that I was directed by Nick Searcy in his most recent film. So I almost killed a UFC fighter, and I was in a Nick Searcy directed me. It's been a good couple of months for Jason Jones.
That's right. Well, I was just on the phone with a guy named Kurt Schlichter, who's a friend. I don't know if you know who he is, but he does some fill-in radio stuff. And he referred to me as America's greatest hero. And I think that I'm going to adopt that as my new moniker. So when you're sending that out to people, just call me America's greatest hero, Nick Searcy.
Nick Searcy. I was directed by America's greatest hero, Nick Searcy, in his latest film.
Yeah, that sounds great. That sounds great.
No, well, you know, you both are two great heroes that your work is liberating countless thousands of heroes that are probably living in dread. And this is something I've told all of my friends. Again, I'm going to go back to Rene Girard. He says, we crucify the vulnerable, but then we deify our victims. And it used to take centuries. You know, they'd burn you at the stake, and then a couple hundred years later, they'd call you a saint and make a statue for you. Now it takes like 4 years. So I think like in 4 years, Nick, you're going to be hosting the Oscars. It'll be America's greatest hero, Nick Searcy, hosting the Oscars. This is what's going to happen. Mark my word, this is science. Yeah, if you don't believe me, it's because you don't believe in science. This is what's going to happen.
I love it. I think we should just start shooting that now. I'm going to, you know, Chris and I'll start making that movie right now. Nick Searcy hosts the Oscars. That'll be great.
Nick Searcy. Oh, we'll start the document, like the whole process from here until then.
Right. That's my campaign to host the Oscars.
That might be a good idea, actually. I'm in. Well, guys, we're going to put the website is the website is capitalpunishmentmovie.com, correct?
Nope.
Capital Punishment, the movie. The link will be in the show notes. Is there anything else you guys need me to put in the show notes?
Just pray for America.
Just pray for America. Watch this movie and tell me if you think this is the way Americans should be treated.
No, and this January 6th event was the greatest cross section of America I have ever seen. I was not a fan of MAGA until January 6th, and then I realized what MAGA means. It's people that our elite feel are beneath them and do not deserve representation. And a wild real estate developer from New York, for all of his faults, thinks all Americans' voices deserve to be heard. And that's why you had such a strange collection of folks that you can't imagine they share anything in common, and it was their love of Donald Trump. And they were actually across the political spectrum. All sorts of interests were represented there. What they had in common was everyone else thought they were beneath a voice. And right. Your movie's giving them a... And then what do? We take the outcast, and because they're outcasts, we feel they're perfectly safe to exploit and destroy. And what your film does is says, you know what? No, these aren't lepers. And even if they are, I'm going to sit right next to them. So thank you.
And, you know, so many people that we show in the film are people, you know, Chinese people, Vietnamese people that came here from other countries, from countries that were under totalitarian rule. And those people were not necessarily even there for Trump. They were there for American freedom. They were there because they understood that our individual liberties are what is under attack. And, you know, it's bigger than Trump. There's even a man in the movie who said that. It's not just about Trump anymore. They're attacking us, and we're tired of it. And that's really the message of the film. It is American individual liberty that is under assault from these people, and that goes across all racial lines, all color lines, all religious lines, everything. And that's why that crowd was so diverse.
Well, this is the perfect film for Thanksgiving. Everyone needs to sit around and watch it after the Lions game.
Yeah, I tell people, look, if you have a nice, peaceful Thanksgiving dinner and nobody gets in a fight, put this movie on. Then the fight will start.
Or turkeys are so expensive right now. If you don't have enough turkey for everyone, show it before you eat, and you'll have enough turkey for everyone. But I don't think so. I think this would actually unite folks. I have a movie right now on Fox Nation called Divided Hearts of America, which addresses what's at the heart of all of our division. But what your film really does is it brings such clarity to it, and you have a great sense of humor, and it comes through. I love when you're talking about how this is going to help you in Hollywood, then you get shot. That was a great scene.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks for giving away the whole movie right there. Great.
Nick Searcy, he doesn't see dead people. He was actually dead the whole movie. I gave it away. Right. Yeah, no, you gave it away. So, gentlemen, thank you. I know that you have interviews stacked back to back. I can't thank you enough for making time for the Jason Jones Show. And all of us, we all commit that we are going to watch your show this weekend.
Thank you so much. Just make sure everybody buys it individually. Don't all watch it in the same room.
No, we're all gonna social distance and watch it at home with our masks on, alone. No, but my whole audience, we're all gonna watch it. They're not coming to my house.
You gotta be safe.
You gotta be safe. No, we're all gonna put the audience. We're gonna listen to it. We're going to buy it several times. You'll appreciate this, Nick. I was getting my hair cut in Toronto, and I always ask people, what are your favorite movies? And this girl cutting my hair said, my favorite movie is this movie called Bella, which was my first film. And I said, did you see it in the theater? Did you get it on DVD? How did you get it? She's like, I bought it for $1 in Chinatown. We're not going to Chinatown for your movie, guys.
Right. No. Yeah. He should have given you 10 cents at least.
Right. I would have. It would be available in Chinatown, but unfortunately the screener link you gave me was watermarked.
Right.
So that's not going to be able. No. That's not the option's not available. Well, you guys have a great Thanksgiving, and we really appreciate your courage and your work.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank
you so much, Jason. Thank you for having us.
God bless, buddy.
God bless. All right, guys, what a privilege to interview those two wonderful men. And you can tell they're brothers because they have been to battle. They have suffered great risk together, and they've accomplished something great with this movie. So you have your task right now. It's Thanksgiving. You're going to go to capitalpunishmentthemovie.com. You're going to go in the show notes. And remember, you spell capital with an O. You are going to go in the show notes. You're going to watch the film. And you're going to share it with your family. And I'm going to go into my Wikipedia and put that I have been directed. I was once again directed. I forgot to tell him. I was once again directed by Nick Searcy. He directed me in Gosnell and in Capital Punishment. How great was that? That I didn't even know that one of my heroes had me on his phone. He filmed me. I was in his film. So I have to go update my Wikipedia. Jason Jones was once again directed by the great Nick Searcy. The most important man in America, Captain Freedom, and in his latest movie, Capital Punishment. Nick liked working with me so much in Gosnell, where I played the CNN reporter, that he once again worked with me in Capital Punishment. Those are my tasks. And what I do on Thanksgiving, I'll tell you what I do on Thanksgiving. I usually read while my family watches football, and then I fall asleep. I am that guy now. I'm the 50-year-old grandpa that reads with my reading glasses, right? And I fall asleep. Now I'm reading. I've got a series of like memoirs, and I have this novel. It's a novelization of the life of Saint Exupéry, who wrote The Little Prince. His life is fascinating. I've read every book on Saint X, and hear my dog barking. And I also have some memoirs of generals that fought the communists in the Russian Revolution. These whites, these are what they call them, you know, the whites versus the reds in the Russian Revolution. I have some of these memoirs. They're all stacking up. I'll probably read those and fall asleep. But what else am I going to be doing tomorrow? For those of you still listening, we have folks in very desperate situations, and we are getting food and money and cell phones shuttled to them and safe houses across Afghanistan. So that's what I'm going to be doing. Some people said, we're not going to bug you tomorrow, Jason, with our work. I'm like, no, I cannot be shoving cranberry sauce and turkey. And my favorite is the ham. I make the mashed potatoes, and then I take the beets, and I mash up the beets, and then I mix in horseradish. It's my culture. And I love this horseradish beet sauce that I make because no one else wants it. And I also mash the potatoes. That's going to be my contribution. But I will have my phone on all day. And I will be working to make sure that we're getting food, money for their needs. Not a lot of money. We give $220 per group in each safe house that we have to get to them. Some food. And they're in a really desperate position. So I'm not shutting my phone off, even though they were so nice. We're not going to be bothering you tomorrow with the new folks that we need to get food to. I said, no. It's going to be happening. There's no way I'm going to be falling asleep with my L-tryptophan coma, or as we call it in Hawaii, Kanak attack. When the Kanak attack hits, no, I will have to be drinking a lot of coffee, and I will be reading a lot, and my grandkids will be running around, and my kids will be running around. Do you know what my kids are doing right now? And all the kids in the neighborhood came up with this idea. I can't wait to hear how it goes. They have just left the house, and they are trick-or-treating. They are trick-or-treating on Thanksgiving Eve. But on that note, you can be helping me on Thanksgiving by Giving Tuesday is next week. But going now to thegreatcampaign.org and giving your greatest gift, because we need to raise $1.4 million to move and resettle everyone left on our list. And I know I have to raise this by December 31st. And the Jason Jones Show, which began as something I did in my garage on the west side of Oahu, has grown to a very large audience and the number one source of new donors for the work that we do serving the vulnerable. It really became just, I have interesting friends that I want to talk to. I really should probably record those conversations and just throw them up. That's how the show started. And I will be consistently inconsistent, which sadly I have been. And when I put up shows, I will talk for as long or as short of a time as I want. And I will interview my interesting friends and the beautiful work they do. And I will throw it up for whoever wants to listen. And this show has many weeks. We're in the top 200 shows. Usually, we're in the top 200 shows in the world. And we've made it into the top 20 once or twice, I think. So thank you. So I thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing the show. But really, if you want to stand shoulder to shoulder with us, now is the time. Go to thegreatcampaign.org. Become a donor, and also go to MyPillow.com, avoid the malls, get a great gift, supporting a great man and his company, Mike Lindell, with all these American-made products. The Giza Dream sheets are fantastic. The pillow is the best. You know I'm obsessed with the mattress topper, and I have a Tempur-Pedic bed. I have a Tempur-Pedic bed, which my wife will not let me put the mattress topper on, so the mattress topper goes in the kids' room, the game room, and I put it on the floor, and I sleep there many nights because I fall asleep listening to Audible, book on tape. And my wife's on the Tempur-Pedic bed, and I am on the mattress topper in the kids' playroom listening to an Audible with a stray cat, which it's not really not a stray cat. I say that so I don't tell the truth, which is I've basically kidnapped the neighbor's cat, and the cat stays over here more than at the neighbor's house. Actually, the cat belongs to the neighbor, but it lives here a lot of times, and it's often sleeping right next to me on the mattress topper in the kids' room as I fall asleep listening to Audible. Why did I even bring up Audible? They don't sponsor this show. But go to MyPillow.com, get your mattress topper. Audible should sponsor the show because I've listened to about 2 months of books on Audible. You know, it tracks that. It's like you've listened to 67 days, 24 hours and 32 minutes and 7 seconds of books. That's true. I should screenshot that and put it in the show notes. But go to MyPillow.com and get all of the wonderful gifts. Slippers, sheets, mattress topper, pillows, bathrobes for you weirdos. I don't like bathrobes, but they're great. If you like bathrobes, they're there. If you're a weirdo, you need to get, and you like bathrobes, and you walk around your, if you're that guy or gal that walks around your house in a bathrobe, you're weird, but you know the best bathrobe in the world is at MyPillow.com. Go there. Use the code Jones. I've rambled long enough. Can't wait to hear how my kids trick-or-treating on Thanksgiving Eve has gone. It's the Jason Jones Show.
This has been the Jason Jones Show, powered by Mudhouse Media.